Good afternoon, everyone. I call this meeting of the Senate Education Committee to order. It is 3:31 p.m. here on Wednesday, March 18th. We are in the Belts Committee room here in the State Capitol Building in Juneau. I just want to ensure folks know who are here in the room, if they want copies of today's meeting or today's documents, they are there by the door. They've also been uploaded to BASIS, and they've been distributed to members. I also encourage folks who are here in the room if they could please mute their cell phones. All right, members present today are President Stevens, Senator Keel, Senator Yunt, Senator Bjorkman, and myself, Senator Lukey Gail-Tobin. Please let the record reflect. We do have a quorum to conduct business. I want to thank Susan from the Juneau LIO and Mary Gwen from Senate Records for joining us today. On the agenda is the confirmation for the governor's appointments to the State Board of Education Early Development and the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. We will also have the first bill hearing for Senate Bill 277, sponsored by the Senate Education Committee. We will be taking public testimony on both items. If you would like to provide public comments, please call the following teleconference numbers. From Anchorage, the phone number is 907-563-9085. From Juneau, the phone number is 907-586-9085. From all other locations, please call this toll-free number, which is 1-844-586-9085. You can also testify from your local legislative information office, or you can email your public testimony to senate.education@akleg.gov. That's senate.education@akleg.gov. I just want to let folks know, as I have heard there's quite a bit of interest in Senate Bill 277, we do have public testimony scheduled for today. However, we do have a hard stop at 5 o'clock, so we will be keeping public testimony open, and we will ensure anyone who is on the line and unable to testify, we will get to at our next available bill hearing for Senate Bill 277. I apologize to folks. I have a board meeting this evening, and I cannot miss it. So we will be keeping public testimony open. We will get to you, but I apologize if we're not able to get to every testifier today. The first item on our agenda is the confirmation hearings for the governor's appointees to the State Board of Education and the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. I believe here in the room with us, we have Pamela Dupras, and I believe our second appointee, Sally Stockhausen, is on Teams. For the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, we'll be hearing also from Michael Robbins. Ms. Dupras, thank you for joining us here in person. If you would like to provide your opening remarks.
Hi. Through the chair, this is Pamela Dupras. Thank you for the opportunity to be heard. I applied to the state board a second time, and here I am. I am an educator, and I have been for the past 23 years, all throughout the state. My interest in being on the board is to try to provide an excellent education for every child in our state. I'm not sure what else you want to hear.
So. Oh, that's great. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing none, I just want to thank you again for joining us here in person.
Thank you.
We will now move on to our second appointee for the State Board of Education. That is Sally Stockhausen. Ms. Stockhausen, if you can hear us, if you could please identify yourself for the record and then begin with your opening remarks.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Sally Stockhausen. I live in Ketchikan. Currently, I'm the Special Education Director for the school district here. I have been in education for 28 years, which I can't even believe it's actually that long because I don't feel that old. I started in 1998 in Texas. My husband and I moved to Alaska in 2002, thinking we were coming here for a quick adventure and we would go back to Texas, but here we are. I began my career in Copper River School District and was an elementary special education teacher. We moved to Ketchikan in 2008 and have been here ever since. Most of my career has been in special education. I'm excited to be reappointed on the board. I, like Pam, believe in our mission, and I'm very excited about reading training for teachers, and I'm very excited about the movement that we've made in the last few years towards our apprenticeship program. To work on our teacher retention and recruitment in our school district by growing, or in our state by growing our own. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for those comments. Are there any questions for Ms. Stockhausen? Seeing none, I want to thank you again for joining us here at the Senate Education Committee. We'll now move on to Michael Robbins, from the who has been appointed to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. Mr. Robbins, or excuse me, Superintendent Robbins, if you can hear us, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you're ready.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Michael Robbins, and I serve as the superintendent of the Bristol Bay Borough School District. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today. I am honored to have been renominated to continue serving on the Alaska Professional Teaching Practices Commission. For the past 3 years, it has truly been a privilege to serve on the PTPC. The commission plays an important role in protecting Alaska students and maintaining the integrity of the education profession. Throughout my career in education, my philosophy has always been to make decisions based on what's best for students. I believe that when we keep students at the center of our decision-making, we make better decisions and choices for our schools and for our kids. I have been serving as a superintendent for the past 4 years and previously was a principal in Tuxuk Bay, Alaska. Working in rural Alaska has given me a deep appreciation for the dedication of educators across our state and an important role they play in the lives of students and families. We are truly the heart and center of our communities. It has been an honor to serve on the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, and I am very proud of the work the commission continues to do. I would be grateful for the opportunity to continue serving in this role. Thank you for your time today, and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have. Wayana.
Thank you. Thank you, Superintendent Robbins. Are there any questions? Seeing none, I want to thank you once again for joining us here at Senate Education. I'll now open public testimony on these appointees. Is there anyone here in the room who wishes to testify? Seeing no one here in the room and looking to see online, there is no one online as well. I will now close public testimony. Any final questions from committee members? Seeing none, President Stevens.
Madam Chair, the Senate Education Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees to the State Board of Education and Early Development and the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. The committee recommends the following names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration: Pamela Dupras, Sally Stockhausen, and Michael Robbins. This does not reflect the intent of any of the members of the Senate Education Committee to vote for or against these individuals during the joint session to consider confirmations.
The names of Pamela Dupras, Sally Stockhausen, and Michael Robbins will be forwarded to a joint session of the Alaska State Legislature. We will take a brief at ease to sign the committee report. Brief at ease.
Senate Education Committee, please come back to order. Senator Tobin is joined by her aide, Mike Mason, to introduce the bill. Senator Tobin, please put yourself on record and tell us about Senate Bill 277.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. For the record, my name is Lukey Gail Tobin. I represent Senate District I, but I'm here as the chair of the Senate Education Committee representing a bill that we have worked on collaboratively.
My name is Mike Mason. I am staff to Senator Lukey Gail Tobin.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, committee members. Many of you know what's included in this legislation, but for the public's edification, I do just want to walk through each section to ensure that we have a full breadth and understanding of the intent of the committee, as well as some of the issues that we have heard not only here as part of our work on the Education Policy Committee, but also the work through the task force and also our work as we work with the Children's Caucus and other types of education-facing services that we do in our work for the Alaskan, for the public. So Senate Bill 277 attempts to respond to several concerns that we've heard from stakeholders across the state with what we think of our prudent education reforms that really hope to provide a better quality of education services for young folks here in the state of Alaska. Starting on page one, section one works to address an issue that we had included in previous pieces of legislation in negotiations with the governor and really about supporting a broad public option that is accessible to all students. One of the barriers that we heard from many school districts is that with rising costs over the last 20 years and also with some of the changing needs of the education community, they have really struggled to keep abreast of the administrative costs in providing support services to charter schools. One of the pieces that were included in previous legislation that didn't become enacted into law is an increased amount of that administrative overhead that a district can charge for services provided to a charter school. So the language in Section 4 changes the rate from 4% to up to 8%, or what administrative costs are, whichever number is lower. So that is the focus of Section 1. Are there any questions?
Could you give us a specific example of how that might work? Or maybe not a specific, but just an example of how it would work cost-wise.
Thank you. Thank you, President Stevens. So an example is school districts that provide support services to charter schools, such as facility support or potentially an occupational therapist, a speech pathologist, a nurse. In some cases, districts also provide after-school and athletic transportation services for students. We have heard about charter schools who are also interested in having some of their administrative work for HR practices and oversight of collective bargaining agreements that are also provided for by the school district. Those are the types of indirect costs that this particular rate addresses.
Thank you. So the idea is to make the district whole and not damage the district and the other students and by having to pay for something that they're not receiving. But this is something that the kids in a charter school would be receiving.
Yes. For the record, Lukey Tobin, Senator for District I. One of the things that we heard in multiple iteratives of public testimony from superintendents is that our charter schools actually cost more to operate than our brick-and-mortar schools, and that is because of the administrative costs that are being incurred by the district but not necessarily recouped but through the indirect rate to the charter school. So this would allow the district to recruit more of those costs and provide better support to the charter school system writ large.
Thank you, Senator Tobin. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. Through the president to the presenter, I got a question about local control pertaining to this. So we have a lot of different districts in Alaska. We've got a lot of different charter schools. Could each district and each charter school create their own system that's best for that particular charter school inside of Section 1?
Again, Lukey Tobin, Senator for District I, through the chair, Senator Yunt, yes. These are particularly established in the contracts that a school district signs with a charter school and outlined in that contractual agreement. So it is a collaborative conversation between the Academic Policy Committee and the school district when it comes to what is the indirect rate. They can choose up to 8% depending on whether it is a direct fee for service or if it's just an overall capture of a rate.
Follow-up?
Please. Yep.
Okay, that's good to know because I imagine maybe some charter schools may want to take advantage of, you know, help with hiring, maybe help with interviews, administrative stuff, possibly payroll services, HR, and maybe some of them don't. There again, maybe they have to take help with HR and payroll, right? But it's just important to me that each school and each school board can create a system that's best for that specific school. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Yund. Any further questions? Please continue.
Thank you. Thank you, President Stevens. Once again, Lukey Tobin, Senate District I. Moving on to Section 2, this is a new section that we are adding under Alaska Statute 14.03.300. We have heard this from a handful of education stakeholders, and during our time in traveling across the districts, we've also received feedback. One of the things that has become very clear is that as a student wants to exercise choice, they might want to change correspondence programs or move back into their home district. There is a provision that's currently in state law that requires them to give back or pay back all the materials and education resources that they have purchased through their allotment. In some cases, this means a student is looking at paying back 5, 8, 10 years worth of materials that they have purchased, and it creates a fiscal situation or a fiscal barrier that their family just cannot overcome. So this was advocated by a member of the committee to reduce that fiscal requirement on a family or potentially reduce that barrier to changing programs.
Thank you. Any questions on that issue, Senator Yund?
Through the president to the presenter. I think if you look at this, you know, when you talk about the allotment, in every school, every correspondence program pays a different allotment, and that's fine. That's part of school choice. When families are at home and they make their decisions and they purchase their curriculum or whatever they get, maybe in a year or two they decide they want to go to a different correspondence program, and then they're being asked to pay back for these things that were already purchased with public dollars. And I know that's in the state statute right now, but that I think is definitely something that needs removed. So Section 2 would either remove that altogether, or Section 2 would just say that they could not charge anymore.
Lukey Tobin, Senate District I. Section 2 actually amends the statute that those particular provisions fall under, which is Alaska Statute 14.03.300, which is part of our correspondence program statutes. And this would say that a student who ceases to be enrolled in a correspondence program may retain their books. So if they are moving back into a brick-and-mortar school, they would, or if they're moving into a different program completely, they wouldn't have to pay back all of their programmatic materials that they have purchased. It sounds like there might be some interest in broadening that. And of course, as this is version A of the legislation, we are happy to continue working to ensure that it's fine-tuned.
Thank you, Senator. Please continue.
Good to know, and thank you. And I'm glad to hear that we're already talking about a committee substitute eventually. For those that are at home watching, what that means is we're going to take feedback, work through the bugs on this, and then roll out another piece of a legislation that's hopefully better. And so, yeah, glad to see Section 2 in there. Thank you. I think it's very unfair of a school to ask a family to pay them back for the materials that were purchased with public dollars out of their allotment. So I am glad to see that's in there. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Yount. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll confess I was surprised to hear that that's a thing that sometimes happens. I don't find a basis for it in the law. So I'm sorry to hear that this is in here. But I guess the question that comes to mind reading Section 2 of the bill is whether we want it this broad or whether it needs to be narrowed a little bit. So I think back on when I was in public school, when dinosaurs roamed the earth, if I didn't return my 4-pound textbook, there was trouble. I couldn't get my diploma. In fact, I think when I walked, I got a card in my diploma cover that said, you'll need to return your textbooks before you actually get the thing. Expensive stuff. I know there are some examples out there, and I don't want to get into the lawsuit of allotments being used to buy radial arm saws and, you know, high-end stand mixers and the like. Are those things all to be kept by the families the way this is written? The advanced textbooks that cost a substantial amount, are those all to be kept? Or are we going after consumables here?
For the record, Lukey Tobin, Senate District I. Senator Keel, the way that the language is currently written is a very broad interpretation. So if there is interest in narrowing that, we are very happy to continue working with the committee to ensure that the language meets the intent of the committee.
Okay, thanks.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Keel. Any further?
Not in this section.
Okay, thanks so much. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, President Stevens. Again, Lukey Tobin, Senate District I. Section 3 amends the pupil transportation statutes. Over the last year, inflation has continued to erode the purchasing power of the adjustment we made in the previous legislature to ensure students are able to get to school. This is just another adjustment to pupil transportation costs, specifically using the motor fuels CPI of the last year, which was about 6.5%. One of the things I learned in the course of working on this particular section is we have to use whole numbers. So some of the numbers are a little bit more than 6.5% because we rounded up. And that is simply because you cannot have cents, apparently, within these particular statutes. I found that also to be very interesting and a good learning lesson for myself, who here in year 9, I have learned that it's difficult to add cents to the pupil transport statutes.
Thank you, Senator Tobin. So the numbers we're looking at per student amount, the left number, a large number, and darkened would be what it's going to. The one on the right is what it was last year. Recently.
Yes. Once again, Lukey Tobin, Senate District I. Yes, President Stevens, that's correct. It equates to about a $6.5 million increase overall.
Thank you. Any questions? Please continue.
Excellent. Section 4 is a statute that we amend that actually correlates to Section 7, so I'm going to talk about these two. You'll hear me talk about them interchangeably. So Section 4 amends Alaska Statute 14.14.110, which allows districts to enter into cooperative agreements. An example I will provide for the committee is currently there is a student who lives in the Mat-Su district. However, they attend an in-person school in the Anchorage School District for a choice that they choose to exercise. The two school districts collaborated on an agreement together, and the decision was made that the money that supports that student's education experience would go to Anchorage less the local contribution, as that is Mat-Su taxpayers paying into their public education system, and the Mat-Su School District wanted to retain those dollars. So that is the current collaborative agreement that those two districts reached together. In this particular section, we would require that districts who create collaborative agreements for students who live in their district but are enrolled in a correspondence program outside of their home district have a very prescriptive collaborating agreement, and we sure that is to protect both districts as they create that agreement and decide on what those services might be. So in this, we follow the previous example from the charter school statutes and create that indirect rate and cap it at 8%. So a district could not charge more than 8% indirect to support a student who lives in their district, maybe participates in after-school programs or takes a single course, or perhaps is getting occupational therapy or speech therapy services, or also is receiving some level of other education services by that home district, while also participating in an out-of-district correspondence program. Additionally, that 8% is also inclusive and hopefully will capture the local contribution, the local taxpayers in that district, ensuring that their dollars continue to support the public education system in their geographic region.
Thank you, Senator Tobin. Comments, Senator Yount.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the senator presenting, I got a quick question. So, again, we're going to talk about Section 4, Section 7 together, how they work together, how one protects one, or one is, I guess, maybe in place to help protect the other one. And so I consider myself a pretty well-read guy. With that being said, I'm not a legal scholar. So if I ask you a question that you're not comfortable with, and we've got access to attorneys today, that'd be fantastic. But looking specifically, Section 4, page 4, line item, or line 24, it reads, a district may cooperate, or the department may require a district to cooperate with the other districts. Can we speak to that briefly?
Yeah. Again, Lukey Tobin, Senate District I, through the chair, Senator Yount. There are districts that choose not to enter in collaborative agreements because they don't have any reason to with other districts. This language allows for that collaborative agreement amongst districts that, as my example previously was Mat-Su and Anchorage, need to establish that contract. There is reasons to establish that contract. If there are no reason to establish a contract, this would allow for that local control determination. We have heard from education stakeholders that there is some concern that there is nothing that triggers a cooperative agreement if a student seeks to exercise education choice and leave their district and attend a correspondence program out of district. This is why, again, is version A. We think that there is an opportunity to add some additional language, ensuring that a student who lives in a geographic region but would like to attend a correspondence program out of their district has the right to do so, and no district can refuse creating that collaborative agreement or that cooperative agreement.
Follow-up, Mr. President?
Please.
Thank you. Turning the page, still same section, but new page, page 5, line 2. It speaks to the up to 8%. And I want to talk briefly about that. So if a student that lives in the Mat-Su Borough or Anchorage or Fairbanks is going to attend a program outside of their community, and services will be provided at their local schools, because they do. Some kids play sports. Maybe they get special education help, the testing stuff. It could be a lot of different things, CTE, up to 8%. No matter what, the home district where the child actually lives cannot take more than 8%, correct, from the district where the child attends. Is that correct? Am I reading that correctly?
For the record, Luki Tobin, Senate District I, through the chair, Senator Yunt, that is correct. And the example that the two examples that I've often used is the Alaska Reads Act. There are supports for correspondent students in district to receive assistance when their student is a struggling reader. And right now, many districts are offering that at no cost, but there is definitely strains on the system. And so this is an attempt to ensure that every student receives the support they need. We know that every district wants to ensure that students learn, but we also recognize that that comes at a cost.
Yeah. Follow up, Mr. President?
Yes, please, Senator Young.
That this is very comforting to know, and I'll tell you why. I think and you're looking at school choice and each child individually. Hybrid, I see hybrid being a big part of the future, where perhaps you take classes in a correspondence program or maybe that's the bulk of your program, but then you want to go to your local high school for a trigonometry class or for whatever may be a really advanced class or a welding class, right, a baking. And so to get the best experience possible for these kids, we want them to be able to go to any class they can, right, and at a different schools. And so I'm glad to see this. There's a lot of confusion with Section 7, and I think people are concerned that Section 7 would say you're going to take all the money from XYZ program that's statewide and you're going to give it all back to the Mat-Su Borough, as an example. It could be any other district, right? Where Section 4 protects from that happening, and it only allows up to 8%, right? The next question is, if a child is attending a statewide correspondence program and does not go take trigonometry, does not play sports, does not use any sort of special education classes or career and technical education classes, does the district where the child lives have to take any money? You know, if they're not using their local schools for any of their services, could that rate be as low as 0%? If you don't mind.
Again, for the record, Luki Tobin, Senate District I, through the chair, Senator Yunt, correct. I do think it's also important to note that, questions we have heard pertain to accountability and ensuring that there is fair and cooperative engagement between districts. That is the purview of locally elected school boards, and that is in the purview of the voters. But I also want to make note that on line 2 of page 5, these collaborative agreements do need to be approved by the department. And so there is an additional check to ensure that there is hopefully a fair negotiation happening between districts.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Yunt. Senator Tolman, I'm for some reason, I'm sort of thinking about a speech therapist. You know, a young child early in school needs a speech therapist, and my district has a speech therapist. But to send that therapist out to Bristol Bay is going to be more than 8%. Or what? How does that work? I mean, you can't force a district to do something. But yet, at times, would there be something beyond 8%? I'm not sure how that 8% really works.
Yeah. Again, Lukey Tobin, Senate District I, President Stevens, that is a great question, and I think that is one that is quite nuanced. So currently within regulation, we do allow students to dual enroll, but it starts at 25%. So a student needs to take a certain number of courses in person. This would really try to capture when a student is not dually enrolled, and we also recognize that there are options for telehealth and other types of services or telesupport of districts. We do believe that those are local little decisions that need to be made at that local level. And so this is an attempt to create guardrails and to create a structure that looks like it has worked really well between districts and to ensure that that mechanism stays in place. We always know that there's going to have to be tweaks as we go along, as we get continued feedback, and also as certain situations and instances arise.
Thank you, Senator Tolman. Further questions, comments? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Senator, I understood earlier we're going to tweak the language so that a cooperative arrangement is not optional, so a local district can't say, no, we're not letting you enroll in the statewide program. Can you help – that's great. Can you help me understand the restrictions on the administrative services fee on page 5, lines 3 through, I guess, 6? So the admin services fee is the indirect cost rate. Department's got to approve it, can't be more than 8%. And the administrative services fee may not include costs incurred by the entity providing the correspondence study program. And then there's a list of things, including in-person classes, which I don't think is correspondence. Help me understand what we're doing there.
Yes. Lukey Tobin, Senate District I, through the chair, Senator Heel, great question. As I just mentioned, dual enrollment. So this was language that we requested the Ledge Legal to ensure that students would still be allowed to dual enroll. And so that that administrative fee would not take the place of students who chose to go part-time or half-time to a brick-and-mortar school and participate in three classes in person, or potentially take advantage of a longer type of CTE program, like let's say NACTEC is a six-week out-of-district residential program. There may be some need to clarify and ensure that what our intent is being actualized by this particular language.
So if I may, Mr.
Yes, please.
So just to get it at the intent, it sounds like we mean for a student who takes AP Calculus at Juno Douglas High School, but the rest of their classes through IDEA, the portion of the BSA that pays for the AP Calc class isn't in this admin services fee. Thank you. You're nodding yes for the record. Does it mean that the percentage, the admin services fee, or the percentage admin services fee can't apply to those dollars?
Again, Lukey Tobin, Senate District I, through the chair, Senator Heel. That is a great question. I think we might have to follow up to ensure that what we're trying to ensure, which is that providing of one-time supports or services to students that pertain to their education experience that they may need in person, aren't necessarily added as an additional cost to the student. Some of the feedback that we have heard from stakeholders is their child wants to participate in wrestling, but they're being charged a fee because they're not enrolled in that district. This we're trying to ensure that every student is able to take an after-school program or potentially get occupational services, but not being charged an additional fee that is captured in this indirect.
Okay. And one last.
Please go ahead.
Just to further clarify intent, you don't mean to prohibit a dual-enrolled student from having to pay the same activities fees as a local student?
Correct.
Okay. Just checking. Thank you.
Further questions, Senator Yant?
Thank you, Mr. President. To the presenter, so can we speak a little bit more about dual enrollment? And I apologize if maybe I'm not as familiar with it as everybody on the committee. I used a statewide correspondence program for one of my sons one time, but we didn't dual enroll. We just used that. It was the best fit for him at that time for hockey and for sports and life and stuff, but we did not dual enroll. We just used the statewide correspondence program. So I know where my son's, where his money went. It was to that program. But I don't quite understand how dual enrollment works. So could you just give me a couple of examples and let me know? Thank you.
Yeah. Senator Tobin, District I, through the chair, Senator Yunt, a dual enrollment program has a student who's attending some part of their who's receiving some part of their education services in person and some part through a correspondence program. Currently, regulation starts that at 0.25, so a student taking two courses would be considered into that bracket, and then it goes all the way up to potentially 0.75, that you can be taking that many in-person classes and maybe one or two correspondence programs. The example I often use to folks is when I was a senior in high school, I had taken every course offered by Nome Belts High School and was able to take two math classes through correspondence that continued to advance my math journey. That is a very similar experience for many kids in rural Alaska, where there becomes a situation of where the programs or the services they want offered or the classes they want offered cannot be provided in person.
Okay, so if I'm understanding correctly, then a dual enrollment or how it could work in a multitude of ways, from a low percentage to a high percentage of classes taken locally or taken statewide, and that just enables for their BSA to be split accordingly between the school where they're at and then the other programs. Is that correct?
For the record, Lukey Tobin, Senate District I, through the chair, Senator Yunt, correct.
Thank you. And so a dual enrollment could also extend beyond one other district. It could be other programs, right? Additional programs, two or three.
Mike Mason, staff to Senator Tobin. I just want to make an observation that the dual enrollment is just one more school choice model, where someone can attend a correspondence program because that's right for them for a certain class, then they could go to an in-person class as well. So it's just one more model of kind of school choice.
Thank you, Mr. Mason. Senator Yunt.
Thank you for that. And I, it kind of goes along with what I consider a hybrid model, right? I have kids that I coach that do classes at Colony. They take classes at the university, and then they do correspondence classes as well. It's awesome. It's fantastic. So it sounds like dual enrollment is what I would consider to be a hybrid model. So thank you.
Thank you for the questions.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, President Stevens. Moving on to Section 5. Section 5 removes the multiplier that is applied to correspondence students. Currently, a correspondence student is counted as 0.9 of the average daily membership, and that 0.9 does not go through the full foundation formula. This section would remove that multiplier and instead ensure that the correspondence student receives 1.0 of the ADM, considered similar to base student funding as every other student. That student still would not go through the foundation formula. They would still receive just the base student funding. And in Section 6, we increase the base student funding by the Anchorage CPI, which was the average Anchorage CPI, which was 1.9%, increasing the base student allocation by about $126.
Question, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if I might ask Senator Tobin. She just said the correspondent student does not go through the rest of the formula, but doesn't Section 7 put them through the rest of the formula? What am I missing?
Mike Mason, staff to Senator Tobin. This is one of the sections that has confused a lot of people because you have to put that student somewhere. And what we have chosen in Section 7 is that student would be counted under the ADM of the school in the district with the lowest ADM. So it does not, though you would think it might mean that student then goes through all the multipliers, that's not the case. That they basically they're basically counted at that school with the lowest ADM. So that is one of the sections that has really confused a lot of people, because you're counted as like part of that school, but you don't go through all the multipliers that are in the foundation formula.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you count that kid at a school with 35 students in it, I think the incremental multiplier is 1.49. So even if we don't go district cost factor, special ed, all those other elements, are we not taking that correspondent student from 0.9 to 1.49?
Lukey Tobin, Senate District I, through the chair, Senator Keel, we have asked this question of the legal drafters multiple times because what we learned is that a student who is counted in a school district has to be counted at some school. That is the way that the formula works. However, within the structure of this legislation, we have not moved where a correspondent student is counted in the formula model. We've simply just added their physical presence to a school. And this provides that stipulation of which school would that be. Now, we understand that there has been some confusion. We have talked with Ledge Legal. They are very confident of the way that they have drafted this language. However, we've also talked with the department, and they have recommended some clarifying language. So we know that in the next version of this bill that we'll be clarifying this section to ensure that our intent on a committee is clearly outlined in the legislation itself.
And just to clarify, and that intent is that the student does not go through the full multipliers. So that's the goal of at least Senator Tobin, I know.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that clarification is quite necessary. Thank you. Look forward to it. Okay.
Thank you for the comments. Senator Yant.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the presenter, so first of all, thank you. For a long time, folks have wanted to see this increase. I don't think anybody wants to hear that their child's not a whole child, that they're only 90% of a child. And I think this is a fantastic, to me, one of my favorite sections in here, right up with reading grants, right? And so, and there has been a lot of, I don't want to say confusion, just misunderstanding perhaps around Section 7. They don't really, a lot of folks, I think, don't understand how Section 7, 4, and 5 are working in a collaborative way to increase funding to correspondence programs, correspondence children, by 10%, right? It's actually technically 11.11 because 1 over 9 is just that. So you're increasing by just over 11%. And then what you're saying is, if that child wants to do a hybrid or dual enrollment type experience, and then they're using a statewide program, and then they want to take classes in their school at home or play sports, or it could be a multitude of other things, that the school that they are going to in their home community can only take up to 8%. So we're actually increasing by more than the 8%, right? And then for the children that don't use those programs or don't take anything in their home district, they don't even have to pay the 8%, right? And so this is great. It's fantastic. I'm glad to see it's in there. Thank you.
For the record, Lukey Tobin, Senate District I, through the chair, Senator Yunt, the intent of the legislation is not to harm, defund, or cancel any particular school choice option. It is simply a avenue that we can ensure that students are able to participate in after-school sports and also receive support services from their home district at no cost to that student and their family. And that is the structure of what the legislation has been seeking to do and what the intent of the legislation is. I know we here on the committee have heard from a lot of stakeholders about the struggles our districts are facing with some choices about whether they close pools or whether they end all middle school sports or whether they don't offer certain services in school districts like a one school, one nurse program. The hope for this is to continue to support our brick and mortar schools and then also recognize that they are also providing services sometimes to students who aren't enrolled in their district and to ensure that there is no loss of that ability to continue to offer those services or any cost that's shifted onto the family.
Senator Young.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll go a little deeper on an explanation. You know, so say a young man is attending a statewide program and he wants to play a sport at his local school. They pay a sports fee. And I think a lot of people at home think that that covers everything, right? No, that helps cover the coaches and possibly a bus or two, you know, to different tournaments and events. But it doesn't cover the fact that that school program that they're competing with has a principal, a vice principal. They have natural gas bills, electricity bills. They have facility maintenance issues, right? Sports cause by the way. We're pretty rough on facilities. You've got plowing bills. You've got all these other things. And so, yeah, this is fantastic. I'm glad to see that we're increasing the funding for a correspondence child so that they're considered a whole child. And then we're gonna enable these districts to work together so that that kid can have the best experience overall in any sort of dual enrollment environment. And so, thank you.
Okay, hey, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, I have to let you know that I definitely disagree with the categorization we just heard. I think it's a real mistake to look at a funding factor designed to meet the costs of education and call it a value judgment on a child. And so what we do here in this section that we're talking about is pump additional cash into providing correspondence study. That's a policy decision the legislature may make, but it's got nothing to do with the value of a child. And I think it's critical that we focus on that, and because just for a second here, because when my nephew goes to Service High School with a school size factor of 0.84 for the incremental student, the state of Alaska is not saying my nephew is 84% of a child. Never has done. Won't be if we change it. When the state of Alaska provides a district cost factor to Kodiak students of 1.289, the state of Alaska is not saying that Kodiak students are 28% better than Anchorage students.
Wait a minute.
The Senate president may believe that. But the state of Alaska has not made that value judgment. We have put an appropriate, we hope, amount of cash into the different cost of educating the kid. So when I hear that a 0.9 factor or some other factor is a value judgment on a child, it ain't so. It's never been so. So when we talk about pumping additional cash, 11-point-some-odd percent, into the correspondent student, I think we need to focus our conversation on whether it costs that to educate that student compared to what we're paying today, because that's what we're talking about. Are we paying the amount we need to educate the child in that way? So thank you for indulging a little rant, Mr. Chairman, but I feel strongly on that one.
That's a very interesting point. So we are on Section 5.
Oh.
We sort of have gone on to others,
yes.
But anything further than Section 5? How about Section 6? Are we covering that?
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. President. Again, Luki Tobin, Senate District I, for the record. We, I believe, have moved on to Section 8.
Okay.
The one thing I just want to note is that we do recognize that our correspondence families are looking to participate in their brick-and-mortar programs in many different ways, and we recognize that those have costs associated with them. We have heard from many of our superintendents that they are struggling to provide those services to those students for either free or at reduced rates. We think that this legislation really strikes that balance of providing supports to those students to ensure that they can participate in wrestling, after-school activities, that they're able to take advantage of some of the offerings that are happening in district, while also at no additional cost to that student. We all agree that we want our students to be as successful and as vibrant as they possibly can. I think athletics is a core part of that. And in this legislation, we're seeking to provide that resource to allow them to continue to participate at no additional cost.
Thank you. Mr. Mason.
Through the chair, Mike Mason, staff to Senator Tobin. Before we move on to Section 8, I just wanted to note in Section 6, which is the BSA increase, the increase would be $126.54. The cost or the infusion into public education would be about another $31.8 million. That would move the new BSA up to $6,786.54. So that's essentially the numbers for that BSA
increase. Thanks for covering that. Thank you. Senator Young.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I may just speak briefly, I know we're ready to move on to Section 8, but I want to speak briefly a little bit about Section 6 and ask. So this increase represents 1.9%, and just for folks at home was what I believe we use consumer price index inflation, right? So the CPI, is that correct, sir?
For the record, Senator Tobin, District I, that is correct. We use the average December 2024 to December 2025 CPI for Anchorage.
Thank you. Okay. We're going, Senator, Mr. Mason.
Mike Mason, staff to Senator Tobin. So Section 8 and several of the other sections here, Sections 10, 11, or no, sections, yeah, those are the two. And Senator Tobin probably can explain this better than I can because she sits on several of these commissions. But essentially, at the federal level, they no longer use regional accrediting agents or organizations. They've changed that to institutional accrediting organizations. So these sections are basically just a cleanup in state law to change it from regional to the institutional. So it's essentially just a cleanup section to more closely align with the way they are doing things at the federal level.
Thank you. Any questions on Section 9? Please go ahead.
And I believe we are moving on to Section, 11 through 16. Thank you. Mike Mason, staff to Senator Tobin. For the past 3 years, I have had, and I know Senator Keel has been working on this as well, some language that was brought forward by CERC to basically allow them to rehire retired teachers. But that has not been successful in getting into any of the other pieces of legislation. I know you've tried. We've looked at other pieces of legislation. So when we were developing this piece of legislation, I pulled out that piece of paper and it was like, let's do this because this would really help the CERC organization. So this essentially lets them rehire retired teachers without impacting that retired teacher's retirement.
Can you explain how that works?
No. But we do have an invited testifier that is going to be from CERC that is one of our invited testifiers, and he can walk through that for us.
And would you identify CERC?
It is the – go ahead, Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, that's the Southeast Regional Resource Center. There used to be regional resource centers all around the state. One remains after the era of consolidation and diminishing funding to nonprofits.
And we're not doing this just for CERC. It has further implications throughout the system.
So Mike Mason, staff to Senator Tobin. So essentially CERC is Alaska's only educational resource center. In theory, I guess there could be additional resource centers. Yeah, it used to be. And just your question earlier, Senator Stevens, AS 1420-136, Reemployment of Members of the Teachers Retirement System, allows school districts to rehire retired teachers and certified staff. That provision does not apply to the Southeast Regional Resource Center, which is the educational service agency. So SB 277 amends that portion of state law to allow the organization to hire those retired education professionals, and that is especially useful for special education teachers and counselors, which CERC does.
Thank you. That makes sense. But currently, districts can hire retired teachers, right?
Districts can, but CERC is prevented.
Right. Thank you. Further questions? Please continue.
Thank you. Thank you, President Stevens. Moving, once again, Lukey Tobin, Senate District I. Moving on to Section 17. This is a provision that we included in previous legislation. However, we made it subject to appropriation. In this section, we removed the line subject appropriation to showcase that we do believe in funding what has become one of the most effective pieces of education policy reform, which is also known as the Alaska Reads Act. We've for long understood that to most effectively deploy that program, it needs to be better resourced. This language was included in House Bill 57 and, again, is showing up here. However, again, we just strike the subject to appropriation. If this particular piece of legislation becomes law, it would trigger about $26 million into funding the Alaska Reads Act at a grassroots or in a classroom level.
Thank you. Senator Yount.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the presenter, so more fantastic news. This is amazing, right? The Reads Act, or some call it Read by Nine, is already being shown to a lot of improvement statewide. But you know, like anything, you've got the carrot and stick mentality, and I think putting money into direct success and encouraging direct success with the carrot is what a lot of other states in the lower 48 have done, whose reading results have skyrocketed drastically. So I'm really excited to see this. I have a question specific to correspondence. And what does it look like if, first off, two-part question, how does a child in a correspondence program meet the requirements of this to qualify for the $450 reading grant? And then second part of the question is, where would that money go? Would it go to the family and the child, or would it go to the correspondence program that he or she was signed up through?
Once again, Lukey Tobin, Senate District I. Under Section 17, any student who participates in a reading proficiency exam or produces a student portfolio and shows improvement on that reading proficiency exam, or is able to show that they have mastered the grade level proficiency for reading, their school district would receive $450. That money would go to the school district in which they are enrolled in.
Follow up, please.
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay, so if that child is in a correspondence program, if I just want to clarify if what I'm hearing is right, then that $450, if the family and the child go through the effort to prove that they can read at the level required to qualify for the $450, that money would still, it wouldn't go to the family, it would go to the correspondence program, correct?
Once again, Lukey Tobin, Senate District I, through the chair, Senator Yunt, that is correct. This is very much a local control issues. The district could use that funding for supports for those families. They could pass it on to the parent. It is a decision that would be made at that local level.
Okay. I have some thoughts on this, but I'll just keep them to myself. I just hope it follows through to the family.
Mike Mason, staff to Senator Tobin. It would work very much like it would work for a brick-and-mortar school. The readings, the money does not go to the child that is attending the reading class. It goes to the school district that is providing the reading class. So it would basically work just like it would in the brick-and-mortar school.
And once again, Lukey Tobin, Senate District I. There is many different ways that we've seen this play out in school districts across the nation. In Florida, they do provide some level of support to the families, potentially in gift cards and bonuses and extra swag for the students. We know in Colorado, they actually use the funding to increase their teaching labor force to be more qualified underneath their reading provisions. In California, we have watched as they have used it to incentivize designations on schools that have high levels of reading proficiency. There is a lot of opportunity underneath an adequate funding in the Alaska Reads Act to continue to see expansion and growth through incentive-based programming.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. President. I understand why it would be that way, right? You're right. It goes to, in a neighborhood school, or we go to the school. They hire the teachers, they pay the natural gas bills, they have the deferred maintenance, they've got all the costs associated with educating that child. In a correspondence type situation, it could be that this family's children are all reading at or higher than the level needed because possibly the parents are just buying more reading curriculum, right? And so that's but we'll let the correspondence programs compete for one another's compete for the kids, free market. And I do hope to see, similar to Florida, that that happens. It's a little worrisome to me because, you know, I've talked to a lot of correspondence families the last few days, and one of their concerns or complaints has been that we did a BSA increase last year, 700, which would have been 630 to the correspondence programs. And of all the parents I've talked to, not a singular one of the programs that they attend increased their allotment. So not $1 of that BSA increase followed the child. It just went to the district. And so, but anyways, well, I guess it's an imperfect world. I'm glad the reading grants are in there. I think they encourage good behavior. And we'll just let those schools compete in their own way to attract families, I guess. So.
Thank you, Senator Yant. Let's go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, President Stevens. We're getting very close, fellas. So here we are on to Section 18. Once again, Lukey Tobin, Senate District I. Senate 18 is actually a piece that comes from our task force in education funding. Over the course of the last 7 months, we have worked with education finance experts and have reviewed previous iteratives of changes made to our school foundation formula, including the instigation of the base student allocation model that we're currently under. Those were all precipitated by reviews of our foundation formula through a research-based process. This section would authorize our Legislative Budget and Audit Committee to commission that review of our foundation formula and provide us feedback on, are there changes, tweaks that need to be made, in addition to what would the adequate inputs be to that particular formula to get the outcomes that we desire, either through the Alaska Star, whether it's in statute, or if it's with the Alaska Standards expectations that we have set.
Thank you.
Mike Mason, staff to Senator Tobin. I just want to make one note. This study would have to be produced in consultation with the Institute of Social and Economic Research at the University of Alaska Anchorage, which has a lot of expertise in this and has been looking at these issues for many, many years. Also, in I think it was November 2025, the task force had a meeting. We had some of the nationwide experts come up, and we've basically been talking to those experts. So this language has essentially been vetted by people that know what they're doing, and this will kind of, in theory, get us to the report that will be useful for the task force, and then in 2027 for you as you make decisions going forward for education policy.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. Senator Tobin, any further questions from the committee before we take a brief at ease here? And okay, we are at ease now.
We're back on the record here in Senate Education. It is 4:33 p.m. here on Wednesday, March 18th. We will now move on to our only invited testifier. Our only invited testifier is Mr. Raytan, the Executive Director of CERC. Mr. Raytan, if you can hear me, if you could please identify yourself and begin your remarks.
Good afternoon, Chair, Senate President, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Chris Raytan. I'm the Executive Director of the Southeast Regional Resource Center, otherwise known as CERC. I'm here today to testify in support of SB 277, specifically Sections 11 through 16, which amend language regarding AS 14.20.136. To offer some background, CERC was established in 1976 by Alaska Statute 14.12.150. CERC is now a private, nonprofit educational resource center and the only remaining organization of its kind in Alaska. Our mission is to provide direct tailored support to school districts through professional service contracts and the administration of state and federal grants. In FY26, CERC has partnered with 88% of Alaska school districts, providing essential services and business services, human resources, special education, counseling, technology, E-rate, facilities management, federal grant development, and academic competitions such as academic decathlon. Currently, Alaska Statute 14.20.136, the reemployment of member of the teacher's retirement system, allows school districts the flexibility to rehire retired teachers and certified staff to fill critical gaps. However, the statute does not currently extend to CERC, even though we employ certified Alaskan teachers to serve those very same districts. Sections 11 through 16 of SB 277 would rectify this by granting CERC the same hiring flexibility as every school district in the state. This is a vital adjustment that would strengthen our recruiting capabilities, particularly in high-demand, hard-to-fill areas like special education and counseling. It would ensure continuity of service for our partner districts who rely on our specialized expertise, and it would maximize Alaska's existing workforce by allowing seasoned retired professionals continue serving students through CERC. This is a straightforward, common sense update to ensure that Alaska's only educational resource center has the tools to support our schools. CERC fully supports the language within sections 11 through 16 of SB 277. Thank you for your time and for the opportunity to speak on behalf of CERC. I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Radon. Is there any questions from the committee members? Seeing none, I want to thank you once again for providing your public testimony. I do apologize. I skipped the fiscal notes. We are joined by Lori Weed of the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development, who is here to review the initial fiscal notes. Ms. Weed, if you can hear us, if you could please identify yourself and walk us through.
Hi. Good afternoon, Chair Tobin, President Stevens, and members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Lori Weed, and I serve as the School Finance Manager for the Department of Education and Early Development. I do have on the line, I hope, Deb Riddle, who can help present the final fiscal note on the student and school achievement, but I will present the others here now. Start off with the Public Education Fund, OMB component number 2804. This is the funding mechanism for both the Pupil Transportation Grant Program and the Public Education Funding or Foundation Formula Program. The fiscal note prepared for Senate Bill 277 reflects projected cost of approximately $77,749,000 for fiscal years 2027 through 2032. This amount includes approximately $4,738,000 due to the identified statutory change to the per student amounts for Pupil Transportation Grants. And it includes approximately $72,966,000 for the changes to the public education funding formula. The changes included in the bill are an increase to the base student allocation, or BSA, from the $6,660 to $6,786.54, removes the 90% correspondence factor. And additionally, it shifts the reporting of correspondence students to the school district in which the student resides, regardless of which statewide correspondence program the student is enrolled in. If the student is not enrolled in a correspondence program of the school district in which they reside, then the ADM of that student will be included in the school with the lowest ADM in that district. ADM including in the school then has all the funding factors applied. Due to the bill's immediate effective date, the fiscal note also provides for an estimated $78,703,400 as a supplemental appropriation for fiscal year 2026 for the combined changes to the two programs. For the foundation program, OMB component number 141, a $0 fiscal note is provided. This program component fiscal note is provided for reference. As previously noted, the funding mechanism is a general fund transfer to the Public Education Fund. We also have a fiscal note for Mount Edgecombe High School, OMB component 1060. This is the division of the Department of Education and Early Development. This is more of a technical note as Mount Edgecombe State Aid is budgeted as interagency receipts, and this fiscal note increases the receipt authority to align with the estimated allocation from the Public Education Fund. The bill creates a projected increase in state funding for Mount Edgecombe High School in fiscal years 2027 through 2032 of $91,100. And again, due to the immediate effective date, we also include an estimated $88,400 as a supplementary receipt authority for fiscal year 2026. And if I can turn it over to Deb Riddle to present this final fiscal note.
Thank you. This is Deborah Riddle, Division Operations Manager for the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence. I'm going to talk about the fiscal note for the Student and School Achievement, OMB component number 2796. The fiscal note that is prepared reflects a projected cost of approximately $22,274,000 for fiscal year 2027 and $22,007,000 for fiscal years 2028 through 2032. This includes the addition of one full-time position, an education specialist two, at an annual cost of $146,700 with $22,800 in annual chargebacks. In FY 2027, there is a one-time cost that would be $5,000 for supplies and equipment, as well as a $250,000 contract for services to assist the department with the creation of an evaluation rubric for evaluating accrediting associations and support deed staff in the initial implementation. There's an additional cost associated with the reading incentive grants that is estimated to be $21,837,600.
Thank you, Ms. Riddle. Are there any questions?
No.
Senator Yen.
Thank you through the chair and to the folks online. And I apologize, I've been taking notes. It was a little bit to keep up with. Can you please let me know again, what is the overall cost of SB 277 as drafted today, and how much was the reading grants amount, our estimated amount for reading grants again?
Through the chair, this is Deborah Riddle. The reading grants $21,837,600, and I'm hoping Lori is adding up the total costs and she can provide that information.
Lori Reed for the record. Sorry, my fingers are not quite that fast at the moment right now.
Thank you, Ms. Weed. If we can also do the math, but if you guys would be interested, we can take that number and we'll distribute that to committee members at a later date. Seeing as no other questions, we are going to move on to public testimony. We do have about 38 folks signed up for public testimony. I am going to set a limit of 2 minutes onto all of our testifiers. President Stevens has graciously volunteered to stay to ensure that we get through all of our public testimony. So I want to just thank him again for being willing to be here. Some of us have unfortunate commitments that will keep us from being able to stay and listen, but we will all listen back if we are unable to be here in person. With that, before we open up public testimony, are there any other comments? As by the time we complete public testimony, we will be unable to continue any additional comments, as I anticipate it will be well after 5 o'clock.
And Madam Chair, I can stay till 5:45, so about an hour.
Perfect. Senator Young.
We can wait and get into public testimony. I had a few closing comments and questions I just didn't get to ask that kind of is, would you like me to do them now? Or so it would be back to kind of the discussion around, you know, the education money following the student. And there's a couple of things that some questions I want to get on the record. Obviously, it was very discouraging to learn from correspondence families that they were being asked to repurchase materials that were already purchased with their allotment. So I'm glad to see we're fixing that. I also learned from these, because it's been a few years since my son was using one of the programs, so I learned that there was no increase to the BSA last year for any of the correspondence programs of the families I spoke to, even though we did an increase to the BSA for them. This bill, I think, is going to help clarify and actually protect correspondence kids who want to play sports, who want a hybrid, who want to do different things by allowing a portion of their money to up to 8%, we talked about, of their funds to go to the district where they're going to do those things at. So that's good. I'm trying to think what else. I think that's probably good for now. Yeah, that's good. I just what I want to see is that these kids benefit from it, right? And like I said, it was a little discouraging to hear that they didn't get any increases in their allotments last year, and then they were being charged if they wanted to go from one correspondence program to another correspondence program. They're trying to charge the families to take their curriculum with them. That is criminal to me, but I'm glad we're fixing that. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Young. Any additional questions or comments? We'll now move on to public testimony. I now open public testimony for Senate Bill 277. We will start in the order that folks signed up. So we will start first with Marshall Blakenship from Wasilla. Mr. Blakenship, if you can hear me, if you could ensure you're not on a speakerphone, you have 2 minutes.
All right. Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Marshall Blankenship. I'm from Wasilla. My wife is a career educator, someone who's wanted to teach since she could talk. I see her system really from both sides, as a spouse to a teacher and as a parent whose daughter has lost a full year of learning in a traditional classroom before a charter school saved her education and drastically improved her outcomes. Every year, right around this time, interest groups put teachers like my wife on the chopping block to lobby for more money. But from the ground, as a parent, the reality is this. Funding has increased twice, hard fought by a lot of members of this committee, yet classroom ratios have risen for 2 years straight. Interest groups are telling you one thing, but parents are doing the opposite. We are in a cycle where increased funding fails to reach the classroom, and that neglect is exactly what's driving families away from school districts and into alternatives, which is causing these BSA deficits. Education is a marketplace. Parents are voting with their feet for quality of education for their children. We must acknowledge the macros. Alaska's our demographics are condensing. The post-COVID baby bust is a permanent reality. In 5 years, elementary enrollments will plummet due to demographics alone. The solution isn't to tax methods and systems that are working. It is to fix what the school districts are doing to mimic those schools which are finding success. In particular, I'm here to oppose SB 277's charter school allotment, doubling the district's doubling the district's cut of charter school money from 4 to 8% is an arbitrary success tax from the perspective of a parent. It's taking away resources from the very schools that are leading our state in achievement. I'm highly skeptical of a lumpy, non-specific fee that seems to bear no relation to the actual services provided by the district to my child's school. 4% is generally what the federal government uses to allot grants to a school district. If a school district should want to exceed this 4% in relation to a charter school, I would be very curious as to how that 8% number came.
Mr. Blakenship, you've expended your 2 minutes. Can you please wrap up?
Absolutely. I encourage your efforts to try to work with school districts to figure out how to actually get zoned kids back in the classroom, but attacking the models that are working is not an effective solution. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We'll now move on to North Pole, where we have Kendra Pizer. I apologize if I mispronounced your last name. You have 2 minutes.
It's actually Piper. You'll have to excuse me. I'm battling a cold. But good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Kendra Piper, and I'm here today as a parent to specifically oppose SB 277. Now, before I start, I want to let you know most of you have probably received an email from me, and I have received several responses back, and I appreciate everybody's attempt at explaining their understanding of the bill. That does also include Kathy Geisel, who sent me an email back this morning that was very short. The tone-deaf response to your own constituents was dismissive and disgusting, and perhaps next time.
Ms. Pizer, I would ask that you speak to the merit of the bill and not necessarily talk to the actions or impugn motives of sitting lawmakers.
Okay. Well, it would be nice to at least attempt to have the interests of the vulnerable students' parents heard. My family made the decision to leave public school system for a reason. My son has autism, and his needs were not being met in our local school district. We tried to work within the system, but it simply didn't provide the flexibility, attention, and individualized support that he required to succeed. Homeschooling through correspondence gave us the ability to tailor his education to fit him, not force him to fit in a system that already wasn't working. That's what this bill concerns me. SB 277 shifts funding and control back towards the very districts that many families like mine have chosen to leave. Even if it's described as a small change, the reality is that it weakens the idea that funding should follow the student fully. if my child is not being educated by a local school district, why should that district retain a portion of the funding meant for his education to fund sports? This isn't about just money. It's about control and it's about trust. Families like mine stepped away from traditional system because it didn't serve our children. We found something that works, but this bill still starts to tie us back into that system again.
Ms. Piper, you've expired 2 minutes. If you could please wrap up.
I want to also be clear, not every family wants to increase access to district classes or programs. SB presented as a fairness or access bill, but from where I stand, it moves us in the wrong direction. It risks reducing flexibility, shifting controls away from families. Many parents...
I just want to encourage folks, if they would like, they can email us their public testimony. But as we have many folks who are online, I'm asking folks to stay to the 2 minutes. Again, you can email your public testimony to senate.education@akleg.gov. We'll now move on to Anchorage, where we have Matthew Forrester. Mr. Forrester, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, thank you. I am a homeschooling parent. I'm calling representing myself and my family, and I am also in opposition to Senate Bill 277. I would say, you know, Section 7 directs all the funding to local school districts and zero funding to statewide programs. And it sounds like the reasoning behind that is that Section 4 solves this by requiring cooperative agreements between local districts and statewide correspondence programs. But there's nothing in the bill that requires the local districts to be cooperative in that. You know, and so as a person who's, all three of my children have, you know, are involved in statewide correspondence or have graduated from them, you know, there's no legal obligation for my rights to be honored or my right to school choice to be honored. And I don't like that. The local school districts, there's no incentive for them to, you know, to want to pass money along to the statewide programs. In fact, the opposite would be true. The incentive would be for them to keep as much money as they could for themselves. The bill doesn't have safeguards, no guarantees. You know, it's kind of, there's been a lot of talk, you know, during this session about, you know, the bill needing some tweaks. But it kind of seems like you just want us to trust you. But someone has had to call in multiple times over the past several years. It doesn't really feel like the Senate Education Committee has my children or my family's best interest at heart as homeschooling families and correspondence programs. I'd also just like to say that the provision for, you know, for preventing the return of materials, I think, has been misrepresented. In any school, you're expected to return certain materials. You know, if you're in a brick and mortar school and they give you an iPad, you're expected to return it. It'd be unrealistic to expect correspondence schools to not have that same sort of criteria for, you know, for items.
Mr. Forrester, your 2 minutes have expired. If you could please wrap up.
Sure. And I guess I'll just say the last thing, I agree with the 8% seems like an arbitrary number and way above a standard for administrative cost. And then lastly, I'll also say that it's not.
I just want to encourage folks to stay within their 2 minutes. We have many folks who are online and we want to give everyone a fair opportunity to provide testimony. We'll now move on to Fairbanks, where we have Rebecca Myers. Ms. Myers, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Madam Chairwoman Tobin, members of the Senate Education Committee, my name is Rebecca Myers, and I am opposed to Senate Bill 277. Senators, I've taught three beautiful children in my home, one who completed a degree in economics, worked for our senator in D.C., and is now beginning the joy of teaching her own children, one who completed his undergraduate in biomedical science and is currently finishing his second year in dental school, one who is preparing to take his LSAT and graduate early with an undergraduate degree in government. They graduated from Raven, one of the highly functioning correspondence programs in our state. The bill before you touts a support for homeschool students, but effectively decreases their funding. I intentionally did not enroll my children in the local school district in Fairbanks. Why? Because it is ineffective, inefficient, and pushing an agenda detrimental to the wellness and success of my children. The beauty of Alaska Constitution and current policy is that it allows parents the right to school their children at home while receiving the benefits of a structure that allows our families to receive professional support and create a personalized education for our children. This is why my children succeeded. This bill does not support homeschooled students. Rather, it is a craftily disguised effort to take away funding from the successful correspondence schools to fund the failing brick-and-mortar school districts. Senators, stop this bill. Don't insult your constituents. Correspondence schools should not be forced to be bound to the broken system. Thank you for granting me the opportunity to share my testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Myers. We'll now move on to Palmer, where we are joined by Crystal Gillespie. Ms. Gillespie, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Well, my name is Crystal Gillespie. I have homeschooled my 4 children for the last 11 years with CyberLinks, a statewide correspondence program out of Nenana. And after listening to just this committee meeting, I think just without more clarifying specific language, you guys have talked a lot about collaborative relationship between the schools and for that 8%. And I just know that Matsu Borough will take all of the 8%. And that would be really detrimental. It would upend our little school to which we've been a part of for over a decade. They would face serious budgetary and operating issues if a majority of their students lost portions of their funding. I know most of CyberLink students are out of district like us, and this would be not only sad, but also upend our homeschool life and process. If this bill passed and the additional funding was diverted and CyberLink was able to remain operational, it's likelihood that then that decrease would pass on to our family, and my kids would have to give up some of the programs that the curriculum choices and extracurriculars that they're able to enjoy that aren't even with the local district. In fact, I'd like you guys to note that my family has never participated in classes, sports, or services with our local district. And it would be unlikely that we'd even use them if we moved in district, if something happened to our little CyberLink school, which I hope not. So this bill is redirecting funds to other districts away from families that would not even benefit from those funds. And in fact, I would not be opposed to completely dropping any correspondence school and going independent. That's how much I deeply value the right to choose how my children are educated. So by diverting funds from our chosen district, you are taking away our school choice. And I know I speak for more than just myself. There are many families that would go completely independent before enrolling in their local district.
Ms. Gillespie, your 2 minutes have expired. If you could wrap up.
Yep. In closing, I'm opposed to this bill, and I think we can solve the budget problems, but I don't think this is it. Let's do better. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move to Here in the Room, where we are joined by Carolyn Storm, the Executive Director for the Coalition for Education Equity. Ms. Storm, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chair Tobin and committee. I'll read fast. We support this bill. It rebalances some of the costs that districts are incurring. It would appear that many people online and many of the written testifiers don't quite understand Section 2 and are unclear of what Section 4 intends, which is not to limit school choice or participating in correspondence programs of their choice, but only to provide the districts where students reside the opportunity to be compensated for some of the courses that students participate in person. I believe a cap of 8% may not be enough and would encourage you to talk to additional districts about that 8% admin fee. I really appreciate the inflation adjustment, but would like to note that Alaska is dead last in our investment in education since 2013. We have only raised education funding by 14% when inflation has been 35%. Iowa, Nebraska, Montana have kept pace with inflation, and Mississippi has increased their investment by 60%. during that time. These numbers are from a 2025 Edunomics study from Georgetown University. Please consider a greater investment. And lastly, it will not surprise this committee that I am highly supportive of Section 18. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Storm. We'll now move back online to Fairbanks, where we are joined by Andrea McWeen. Andrea, if you could identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony, you have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Andrea McEwen. I am from Fairbanks, and I'm a certified teacher. I also homeschooled my children from kindergarten through graduation. Two of them graduated from Fairbanks Best and one from IDEA. I am currently employed by IDEA, full disclosure, because I'm passionate about helping families educate their children. And while I appreciate the legislature's ongoing concern and support for Alaska students, Section 7 is deeply troubling and needs to be revisited and certainly discussed. I think the intent sounds like the intent behind the legislation and the law was to provide funding for districts that are struggling to meet needs, but it has language that lends itself towards all-inclusiveness, like providing funding for those local districts for all students in that district when they're actually not being supported by that district. As written, I don't see language in Section 7 or Section 4 that requires those local districts to cooperate with statewide correspondence programs to use those funds, which will cripple those districts and could shutter programs. Even if the language were changed to mandate districts to cooperate with the statewide programs, what benefit to the student is there in this exchange? Why create a funnel for that funding and double the administrative time and cost? There's no benefit to student outcomes in creating this funnel, and in fact, falsely inflates home district budgets with negative impacts on outcomes for homeschool students. I feel like initially directing all state funding to the local school district when a parent has already chosen not to educate their child there circumvents their choice, and that seems slightly underhanded and a violation of their rights. I also want to make a note that to the senator's comments earlier about notes on allotments not increasing, that's also a reflection on BSA not increasing in previous years, and allotments did not reduce in relation to costs that districts incur as they provide funding for homeschool students.
Andrea, your time has expired. If you could please wrap up your comments.
Yep, I appreciate the impact on special education funding for correspondence programs, increased funding for CTE, and an increase in BSA. So I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We're now joined from Wasilla with Mike Coons. Mr. Coons, if you could please identify yourself for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, this is Mike Coons from Wasilla, and I oppose SB 277. 277 is being sold as a funding adjustment bill and a handful of policy updates. But buried inside its 20 sections, a provision that would end Alaska's successful charter school model and dismantle the correspondence programs thousands of families rely on. Section 5 supporters will point to the increase in correspondence funding, 90 to 100% of average daily membership, as a win for homeschool families. Not really. The bill is slightly sleight of hand by redirecting where the money goes back to the districts where the student lives. Section 7 may be the most damaging at all. It requires correspondence students to be counted in the district where they reside, not the district providing their education. Even worse, those students would be counted towards the school with the lowest enrollment in their home ed district, a formula manipulation that defies logic and invites distortion. The goal is apparent: keep brick-and-mortar schools standing by faking enrollment. Correspondence programs are built-in partnerships that allow students to access activities, services, and opportunities across districts. These are functioning, effective alternatives that serve real families. This provision threatens to bankrupt programs, destabilize districts, and ultimately reduce options for families. The likely result is not a return to the neighborhood classrooms, but rather an exodus to fully independent homeschooling. Some school districts in Alaska are spending well over $100,000 per student with the lowest outcomes. Many of those districts are attacking the very students who receive the least funding in the system and best outcomes. That disconnect tells you all you need to know about what this bill is really trying to accomplish. If lawmakers were serious about improving outcomes for all students.
Mr. Coons, if you could please wrap up your comments.
Yes, common sense steps that can take that would be actually be a win-win for both correspondence programs and traditional districts. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move on to Wasilla, where we have Jacqueline Cray-Murray. Ms. Cray-Murray, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Sure. Guyana, for the opportunity to share. This is Dr. Jacqueline Ayaga Cray-Murray. I'm my 19th year of teaching. I'm also in my 6th year as a contact teacher with IDEA homeschooling program. I'm calling in opposition to State Senate Bill 277, particularly Sections 4 and 7. After reading the bill, it reads like all of the funding and control will be in the hands of the local district and not with statewide correspondence programs. In that vein, this bill threatens the very fabric of what Alaska and Alaska education is, which is independence and parent choice. IDEA and programs like it offer families variety and options that speak to their family values and their schedules. This is especially true for rural and outlying communities where maybe the local schools have failed to teach culturally responsive education and or restricted student freedom to honor their subsistence lifestyles without penalty. Homeschooling allows for these precious practices to be honored by trusting parents who know their kids best. Programs like IDEA take care to partner contact teachers with the families to help guide curricula choices and ensure content rigor and credit completion. So it's a great partnership based on quality relationships and educating the whole child. And that's really the key, isn't it? The whole child. So going back to rural areas in Alaska, to give an example, Bethel has 27 IDEA students and Quinnahock has 2, all of which are flourishing and succeeding in their education outside of the traditional classroom. Those numbers continue to grow for a reason every year. So eliminating homeschooling and parent choice or requiring a cooperative agreement with the local school who may or may not honor the agreement essentially erases an important venue for those that choose and need flexibility in their education. Flexibility does not equate
to less credibility. Ms. Cray-Murray, can you wrap up your comments, please?
Yes, ma'am. It lends itself to creativity. There's nothing more lasting than that.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We'll stay in Wasilla to hear from Darcy Etchvery. I apologize if I mispronounce your last name. If you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Hi there. I'm actually not in Wasilla. I'm up in North Pole. This is Darcy Etchvery. And honestly, today is the first time I heard about this bill. I've been listening to you all speaking and been reading about it while we've been online. And it, just to reiterate what some of the other speakers have said, it sounds like Section 4 and Section 7 are incredibly detrimental to the statewide correspondence programs. I'm curious why anyone thinks it's a good idea, but I suppose it comes back to our local districts, the brick-and-mortar schools, struggling to keep students, struggling to stay within budget, and I don't think that putting our correspondence students in a position where their funding goes through those struggling and failing systems is good for them. It looks like a lot of administrative overhead funneling money to a district that is then going to funnel it to a different district. All we talk about is the increase in administrative costs, and that seems like a huge increase in administrative costs and a reduction in trust between families and our governing education bodies. I think this will push families who are on the fence right now to go completely independent. So I really hope that this committee is really considering that because it is a huge possibility. I appreciate the time to listen in and to give my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We'll now move to Anchorage, where we have Dan Kulander. Mr. Kulander, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, thank you. This is Dan Kulander. I'm a longtime homeschooling parent. I appreciate the chance to give public testimony. I'm a longtime fan of educational choice. I love seeing the options, both brick and mortar and correspondence, and have worked as a paraeducator in special education. My wife and I, after considerable pondering, did choose to homeschool our own children. We partnered with IDEA, and we have graduated two students with them and have two more still. At one point, I actually went back to school to get my master's in teaching and apply for a position with them. So I am now on staff with IDEA. As the earlier conversation pointed out, I share great concerns about the language of a district may cooperate, because, you know, districts will make choices in the best interest of their organization and not necessarily the best interest of the individual child in practice, I think. Currently, as a parent, when I advocate for something, I can advocate to the system and the organization that's actually serving my child. And some of the elements of SB 277 concern me because it feels like advocacy would then need to be directed to the district that is not serving my child in addition to the one that is. And I'm not sure what a local district might claim as educational services for my child when they're enrolled in a statewide program. I think my biggest concern with SB 277 is that it greatly complexifies the situation for statewide programs. If my kids are not, quote unquote, counted for funding as part of the district whose program we've chosen, but rather to the district we physically reside in.
Mr. Cullender, if you could please wrap up your comments.
Yes. I can't help but feel that this places a middleman who is not directly serving my children in control of the purse strings of their education. Thank you so much for accepting my testimony today. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Just a reminder to folks again, people are going over the 2 minutes. If you could please keep it short, we're going to get a little bit more austere in making that cutoff as we do have several folks left to testify. We now move to Wasilla, where we have Lisa Short. Ms. Short, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes. All right, we're going to move on to North Pole, where we have Dr. Barbara Haney. Ms. Haney, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes. We'll now move to Salcha, where we have Renee Hudnall. Ms. Hudnall, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson and committee, for hearing my testimony. My name is Renee Hudnall. I have been a homeschool parent for 12 years now, enrolled with the IDEA homeschool program, and for our family, it has been a huge benefit. I have major concerns about Sections 4 and Section 7. Section 7 states that a student enrolled in correspondence would have their money go to the district they live in, not the district in which they are enrolled in, which to me is concerning as my property taxes already go to the local district, not the district my child attends. I also have some concerns about Section 2 with the returning of materials. With IDEA, I know we do not return much unless we withdraw. That is the only time we are asked to give certain things back. And to me, that makes a lot of sense, considering when you're in a public brick-and-mortar school, you don't take your textbooks with you. I also have concerns about the additional cost of administrating if the funds go to the local district and how that would affect things. Thank you for your time. I don't want to go over my time. Please just know that I have major opposition to this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We'll now move to Juneau, where we have Melissa Fritz. I apologize, as I'm pretty confident I mispronounced your last name. If you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony, you have 2 minutes.
My name is Melissa Fritsch, and I am testifying in opposition to Senate Bill 277. I homeschool both of my now adult children through a statewide correspondence program after realizing that their needs were not being met in a traditional classroom. Thankfully, we had the choice to choose that statewide correspondence program, which gave us choices in classes and curriculum,
and provided certified teachers with specialized support for homeschool families. Senate Bill 277 is a direct threat to parent rights to direct the education of their children. Section 7 would give all state education dollars to the local school district, not to the parent school of choice. As currently written, Section 4 has no provision that requires the proposed cooperative agreement between the local district and the parent's school of choice, again, taking away parent rights to direct the education of their children. The current statewide homeschool programs serve all students and give families the freedom and right to direct their children's education. I ask that you not change a system that serves so many families and students well and provides all students with the opportunity to thrive. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We're now going to switch to President Stevens, leading testifiers. I just want to remind folks that they can always submit written testimony to senate.education@akleg.gov. Brief at ease.
We'll come back to order here. Just remind you, if you don't have a chance or if you have more to say, you can always email us at senate.education@akleg.gov. We'll go on to David Miller, I believe. Mr. Miller.
Hey. Yes, this is David Miller. Thank you, President Stevens, Chair Tobin, and committee. It's a pleasure to speak with you. I thank you guys for your service. I understand how much time it takes to work through these in your thoughtful consideration. I'd like to, first of all, make the point, a couple of observations during the discussion. The first being, I appreciate in Section 17 the incentivization program. I'll leave it at that. And also the discussion of hybridizing potential needs of those who have chosen to use a correspondence program or charter school, and then they elect to use some of the other service in service programs. But the most important thing that I'd like to contribute and propose to this body is the some of the language in Section 7. I would propose a very important change in the approach on this. A district shall include the ADM of a statewide correspondence study program offered by the district, a student who is enrolled in the program and resides in the district. If a student is enrolled in a statewide correspondence study program but does not reside in the district offering the program, the district in which the student resides shall include the student in the ADM. What I would like to recommend and propose is that that language changes so that is required to go to the school district in which the student is enrolled. And then in Section 4, where there's the discussion of appropriations, those discussions can occur then with the enrolled student's district and the district in which the student resides. We, as parents, and as a community, strive to have our very best outcomes for our students, for our children, so that we have great citizens and they build a great state and great communities.
Thank you. Mr. Miller, if you can wrap up your thoughts.
Thank you. I think it would be foolish for us to hire a building contractor at 10% or 8% and then have them go bye-bye. It's very important that the funds go with the student. Thank you so much, all of you. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Mr. Miller. Going on to Barbara Lausius. Please, Barbara, can you hear us? Barbara Lausius, I believe, from Wasilla. Okay, we'll go on then to David Neese in Cooper Landing. Mr. Neese.
Yeah, hi. This is David Neese. Can you hear me?
Yes, hear you clearly. Thank you.
All right, thank you. First of all, thank you for having Bill 277 out there because it presents a vehicle for actually some stuff that could work.
A couple problems. Section 1, the administrative costs increased from 4% to 8%. I've taught for a long time, and the charter school seemed to be doing fine when they weren't able to charge 0%. And you'll recall, because of your longevity, Senator Stevens, that almost every district in the state doesn't have an ability to hold their administrative costs under 25%. So problematic on that one. I think they'll just keep coming back for more. Section 3 in pupil transportation, most of the districts that provide pupil transportation do not comply with the 1963 Matthews versus Quinton decision by Alaska Supreme Court that require school districts that are transporting students, if they're going past a school, even if it's private, to transport those students. I would like to see that included back into Section 3. Section 6, it's really nice to talk about the CPI being 1.9%. It's even better when you say it costs us, for every dollar we increase the BSA, the cost to us is $150,000 to $160,000 per student. And then on Section 17, $450 bonus is a great carrot. Senator Tobin mentioned that, you know, a lot of states have that, but those states also have a stick. If you don't pass reading in third grade, you're not a fourth grader next year. And that is the single thing that would really, really, really help education in Alaska. Problematic 4 and 7, if you have a kid that's counted in the average daily membership, formula multipliers by statute require that you include them. So including correspondence kids into the ADM just increases your cost.
Thank you, Mr. Deese. Thank you very much. Good to hear from you again, David. We'll go on then to, I believe, Jennifer Rigaud.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Rigaud. Thank you for taking time to listen to public testimony, and thank you for your service. I am in opposition to significant portions of Senate Bill 277. I am a former homeschool parent of four children. I've homeschooled in both New York and Alaska. When we moved here 10 years ago, we were pleasantly surprised by the wide variety of educational options available. In New York, there's very little support for homeschoolers and very few alternatives to the brick-and-mortar school. In Alaska, we found opportunity and freedom of choice. This bill removes the incentive for the local districts to continue to allow that freedom. My husband and I were grateful to enroll our children in a statewide homeschool and guide them through graduation. Today, all four of our children remain in Alaska as productive members of society, as a plumber, a teacher, a chef, and an administrative assistant. They were able to pursue their individual passions because we had the freedom to choose the educational path that fit each of them best. We were able to tailor their education to them. When I read SB 277, I'm concerned about the direction it takes us. It feels like a slippery slope that threatens a parent's right to choose the best education for their child. Sections 4 and 7 are especially troubling. As written, they appear to allow local districts to take 100% of the funding under the label of educational services, with Section 7 directing all state funding to the local district. As a taxpayer in Anchorage, my husband and I have contributed significantly to the Anchorage School District, even though we chose a different educational path for our children. That was our choice, and we continue to support ASD with our taxes, but I do not agree that all funding should go to a district that does not serve children like mine who were not served by that district. If all funding is redirected solely to local districts, statewide programs like the one that our family relied on for many years will no longer be viable.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Jennifer.
If you'd
wrap up
family.
Your thoughts, please.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Just wanted to say thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jennifer. Kelly Lessons from Anchorage. Kelly, please go on.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts on Senate Bill 277. I'm speaking as an individual member of the Anchorage School District School Board, and prior to the board having had an opportunity to discuss this bill. But I have reached out to administration and just wanted to offer a couple of clarifying thoughts. I'll say that generally I'm in support of a number of the items here, but will be in greater support of continued work. I want to begin by saying thank you for Section 18. I think it's critical. I'm just going to work backwards. Section 17 leaves me scratching my head a little bit.
I think the one question I really have, other than it being unknown how many K through sixth graders this would apply to, is really a question of timing. If growth or proficiency is assessed in a school at the end of a school year, let's say by late April or May, and results are not available, let's say through the AK Star until September, September 5th is when they were released this year, how will schools be funded with these grants? When would a legislature appropriate that funding, and when would it be delivered into a district's hands so that we could then reinvest in classroom teachers or other wraparound supports? I'd really like to see some improved language on Section 17. I did want to point out that Section 1 really won't materially change for the Anchorage School District, from my understanding, because our indirect cost rate for next year will be 4.19%, and statute here would say the lesser of 8% or that indirect cost rate. Section 3 is insufficient to address the realities of people transportation costs. It would generate about $1.35 million for ASB. I believe offhand our deficit is more than twice that amount. We need to also be cognizant of rising diesel prices, given
Thank you, Kelly. If you'd conclude your thoughts, please.
Section 5.
Kelly, I need to ask you to conclude your thoughts, please.
For the Anchorage School District.
Okay, we'll go on to the next person, which is Wanda Reams. Ms. Reams?
Yes. Hello, my name is Wanda Reams, and I am from Pisgelof, Alaska, and I have worked in both building-based and have homeschooled my own children. When I look at this Senate Bill 277, I see that it limits a family's freedom to choose how best to educate their children. In particular, the part that concerns me is the bill, it does not have any safeguards or rails. There's no guarantees. And right now what we are experiencing on the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, we have a memorandum of agreement between our state-funded IDEA homeschool and the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, but there's no way to enforce it. And the families that I serve are running into this issue where this memorandum of agreement is in place. Both school districts have signed it, but it is not being upheld. And so the families are having to pay double the fees, where a student who resides goes to the building base for their baseball course, it costs them $150, where an IDEA homeschool student is having to pay $300. And even though the parent brings the memorandum of agreement to them, there is no return of the fee, and they're still expected to pay that $300. So my concern is that there needs to be something put into place that I don't see here. For what recourse would a parent have when the school district does not uphold what is in writing? And this is my concern. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you very much, Wanda. Appreciate your comments. We'll move on to Dean O'Dell in Anchorage.
Good afternoon, President Stevens, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Dean O'Dell, director of the IDEA program. IDEA and Galena City School District are very concerned that the language of SB 277 does not match the intent that you've been discussing today. While we can applaud the desire to more appropriately fund education, the current language of Sections 4 and 7 need to be addressed. We've heard that the intent is not to damage parent rights and educational authority, not to step on school choice, and not to bring an end to statewide correspondence programs. But as written, SB 277 would put all of those at risk. By granting all of the funding to the local school districts, there is no guaranteed funding for statewide programs. You have mentioned that we can expect the bill to be modified to require a cooperative agreement, which it currently does not. But even if there were an agreement, the only listed cap is the 8% on administrative fees. Section 4 differentiates between administrative services and educational services.
yet it does not list a financial cap on what the local district could withhold in educational service fees. And this bill provides no recourse for the statewide programs to contest whatever fees are created or charged. Section 4 currently does not assure an agreement, and it does not assure that an agreement would leave programs like IDEA financially viable. If the intent is, in fact, to create more opportunities for students and provide the means for statewide programs to compensate local districts, why is Section 7 necessary? Why the path of most complication, most administrative costs, most uncertainty, and most potential harm? Please remove Section 7 and create the educational opportunities without the harm to parent rights and school choice. Again, we pray
and, Dean, if you could wrap up your thoughts, please.
For all models. We know that all educational models are in need of your support, so thank you again.
Thank you, Dean. Emily Davidson, calling in from Greenville, South Carolina. Emily.
Good afternoon, Senate Education Committee. My name is Emily Davidson, and I am an IDEA homeschooling graduate class of 2021, and I oppose Senate Bill 277, specifically Section 7. I'm calling from South Carolina, where it's 9:30 p.m., because this topic is very near and dear to my heart. IDEA had a huge impact on my life. I was a slow learner, so I needed more individualized support than a traditional classroom could provide. My mom was my teacher, and I also had contact teachers through IDEA for support, where they helped me adjust my learning in a way that allowed me to be successful instead of falling behind. What made the biggest difference for me was having the power of choice. The funding through this program allowed me to follow my interests and learn in a way that actually fit how I learned. Because of that, I was able to build confidence and succeed. I went on to get my undergraduate degree. I'm now pursuing my master's while working full-time at BMW, a global leader in premium automotive manufacturing. My concern with Section 7 is that it removes the choice by redirecting funding to local districts, where decisions may be made on the needs of the organization rather than the individual student. I'm asking you to consider how important that choice is for students like me. It made all the difference in my life, and I hope you won't take that opportunity away from others. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you, Emily. Appreciate your comments. Move on to Leanne Craig in Dillingham.
Hello. Thank you, Madam Chair and member of the committee. My name is Leanne Craig. I am calling in opposition of SB 277 and speaking directly to Section 7 and 4 also. Really, I feel like this is a convoluted both of these sections with where the real point is to take away funding from statewide programs that offer choice. I was able to homeschool my two children through IDEA and appreciated that option. I had the option of my local school district to go to and chose IDEA. Never used the local school district for anything, for sports or any of that. And my taxes, which are pretty significant, went to fund that local school district. I just see this as an attack, really trying to build up and funnel money to building based schools that aren't meeting, don't have the funds they want, and instead of supporting the student. Also, something I want to speak to is that someone talked about the dual enrollment model. Currently, any student, if they enroll in a public local building-based class, 25% of the funds go to that school. So there are funds already going to that local school. So again, I just want to be on record that I'm opposed to both of these. Thank you, Section 4 and Section 7. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Leanne. Appreciate your comments. Move on to Glenn Sobey. Glenn Sobey from Fairbanks.
Did I?
Mr. Sobey. Okay, we'll move on then to Adele Pribanow from Fairbanks. Adele, are you with us?
Hi, my name is Adele Pribanow, and I'm opposed to Senate Bill 277. Good evening, and thank you for listening to the testimonies. I am a longtime homeschooling advocate and a proud supporter of homeschool. I started homeschooling independently in 1984 and have had children in homeschooling, private schools, and building-based schools. I am currently an IDEA homeschool teacher that supports the remote homeschooling families. It seems to me that a good portion of this bill is mostly about trying to get more finances for the building-based schools, as well as trying to shut down the backbone of the statewide homeschooling programs and the charter schools that are successful, both academically and financially. It really shows that, to me, that raising the individual building-based school budgets are more important than a child's education. Section 4, that requiring cooperative agreement between local districts and statewide correspondence programs. I don't see anything that shows a cooperative agreement, as a statewide homeschool program has no say in this agreement. It is all one-sided, and the local school district is the one side that has the power. This means that all the funding and control will be in the hands of the local district, and they have no legal obligation to honor parental rights to education, as we have seen in the Kenai District. I realize that the idea is that the districts that are involved are in a cooperative agreement, but the way this is written, it greatly tips the scale to the local districts. This shouldn't even be in here unless there was a reason to support the local districts. This takes away the parents' rights and responsibilities to raise, teach, and train their children. It is trying to put all children in the hands of the government. Why does the government think it needs to take the choices away from the families instead of requiring the building-based schools to improve their budgeting? If the building-based schools can't stay within their budgets per student, how do they think adding more students to the schools will help?
Thank you, Adele. If you would wrap up your thoughts, please.
It also brings in more expenses in the same equation per student that they already have. And right now, the balance of that equation, they can't balance that equation, so why give them larger numbers? Thank you for listening, and I just want to say I oppose Senate Bill 277.
Thank you, Adele. Moving on to Andrea Neal from Fairbanks. Andrea. Andrea Neal, are you with us? Moving on then.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Please go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Andrea Neal, and I'm the superintendent of Yukon Kaikuk School District and an enrolled member of the Native Village of Nulato. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in opposition of SB 277 in its current form, specifically opposed in Section 7. For years, rural districts like ours in Interior Alaska and the Fairbanks North Star Borough have faced the difficult challenges of making hard decisions, including school closures, while still providing high-quality education to students. These efforts often receive little attention. Now, as urban districts such as Matanuska, Sitna, and Anchorage face similar challenges, it is important that solutions do not take resources from rural districts that have built successful programs. Families across the state, including those who participate in our Raven program, value choice and flexibility these programs provide. And many have told me how much they appreciate the ability to select the program that best meets their child's needs. We oppose Section 4 as we already have strong systems in place that have worked for many years for dual enrollment and use the allotment to pay for CTE and extracurricular activities. We offer our own SPED services. In addition to the added fee for extracurricular activities, we pay the state ASAA fees for all eligible students enrolled. Rather than looking to the past, we need to move forward in a way that benefits all Alaskans, urban and rural alike. Taking from rural districts will not solve the challenges facing Matsu and Anchorage districts, and it could undermine programs that are already working. Our goal is to ensure every student in Alaska has access to the best educational opportunities, and we hope the committee will support a path that strengthens successful programs statewide rather than penalizing districts that are already doing well. While we have serious concerns about this bill, we do support
Andrea, if you would wrap up your thoughts, please.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your comments. Moving on to Patrick Manning, Nanana. And Mr. Manning.
Hi, this is Patrick Manning from the Nanana City School District. I'm the superintendent here. Thank you, Senator Stevens, and members of the Senate committee for the opportunity to provide testimony on SB 277. I am in opposition to a portion of this bill, the way it is currently written. And after reviewing notes on SB 277, I'd like to share some concerns for consideration. Section 4 would require funds that are better used to directly support students to instead be redirected toward additional administrative costs, an area that has been a legislative concern for years. And currently, we provide special education services to our students because many of the local districts are reluctant to do so. Adding correspondent students to the SPED multiplier would benefit 38 districts across the state and help address this issue more effectively. Additionally, districts with students attending in person are already allowed to count them as part-time students, a system that has been in place for many years. Any additional fees for CTE, extracurricular activities, or other district-sponsored programs could be incorporated into the student allotment through Section 5 and the additional funding. Section 7 also appears unnecessary, as the statewide correspondence system has proven effective over many years. This provision seems to be an attempt by larger districts to limit parents' freedom to choose the program they believe best meets their students' needs. Notably, many large districts already offer a larger allotment than the three largest statewide programs, yet parents continue choosing our services. If this bill passes in its current form, my district and others like it would be severely impacted. For years, we've provided an important service that has benefited students through the state. There are better solutions than penalizing those who are working to meet the needs of these students.
Thank you, Superintendent Manning.
For your time and consideration.
Thank you so much, Superintendent. Appreciate your comments. We'll move on to Stephanie Stephanie Forrester in Anchorage. Stephanie Forrester.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling in opposition to Senate Bill 277. I am a longtime homeschooling parent, and I work as the research room coordinator for IDEA Homeschool, and so I am a firm believer in school choice and parents' rights to educate their children as they see fit. IDEA has been a wonderful opportunity for us to educate our children well. And I feel like Section 7, my understanding of Section 7 is that would take 100% of the funding from the school district of our choice and give it to our local school district here in Anchorage. And that would leave the statewide correspondence programs with no funding and no reason to exist. So I feel, and I know, that student choice is important and parent rights are important, and a large portion of homeschooling parents, if you take away the state correspondence programs, will not go to their local school district. They will choose to independently homeschool. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my testimony, and I oppose Senate Bill 277. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Stephanie. We'll go on and then to Deborah Riddle in Juneau. Deborah Riddle.
She's with Dean. She's already.
All right. Then how about Jane Doe in Shishmaref? Jane Doe. All right. If you're not with us, we'll move on to Rita Trometer. Rita Trometer from North Pole.
Yes, I'm here.
Please go ahead, Rita.
Yes, I am here now. This is Rita Trometer from North Pole, and I just have a few little quotes here. And my first one is, my local tax dollars doesn't support the families to the best of the students' interest in the where they live. And I do believe that the money should follow the student so that they get the best choices. The brick-and-mortar schools are losing students due to social pressures of promoting alternative lifestyles. Charter and homeschoolers rate higher on testing scores. Homeschoolers have more opportunity, better education choices, that are open-ended when we're looking at that. And my oldest son, he graduated from the homeschooling program here in the Fairbanks area with IDEA, only he was short two classes from the UAF to get his associate's degree through dual enrollment. And my youngest, he would have never graduated at all from high school due to the restraints of the brick and mortar school. So fantastic that he was able to graduate from homeschooling. With the positive outcomes that the charter and the homeschooling has, it makes absolutely no sense to destroy the success that they currently have with this bill. So I am going to say I am 100% against SB 277, and you just need to shred it. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your comments, Rita. We'll move on to David Boyle in Wasilla. And Mr. Boyle?
Hello, Senator Stevens. Senator Stevens, committee members, I'm David Boyle from Wasilla, speaking for myself. And I want you to know, every time there's an education bill over the last 15 years in the Senate or the House, you hear from stakeholders, which is usually the education industry. Tonight, you have heard from the real stakeholders, the parents and customers of education. I strongly oppose this bill. It's a business model to redirect funding from correspondence schools to local school districts. So even though the local school districts won't have the students, they get the students' funding. This redirection strips resources from successful choice programs operated by smaller and rural districts and funnel the money to traditional schools that many families have opted out on. This dismantles financial model that makes these programs possible. Families who choose flexibility and personalization are now being punished so that declining enrollment in brick-and-mortar schools can be artificially propped up. This is an attack on parental rights and another step towards centralized control. It seems as if the bill's intent is to destroy the correspondence programs and fill budget deficits at local school districts that are unable to manage their finances. In reference to charter schools, I have to strongly disagree with the comment from a committee member earlier that charter schools cost more than brick-and-mortar schools. Please show me the data. Remember, charter schools do not receive any transportation money from their districts. I recommend this bill be amended to say school districts shall provide transportation funds to charter schools based on the ABM. If passed, many of the current homeschoolers will leave the Alaska education system totally because there are some very good online programs that cost very little and are accredited. I want to thank you for activating the homeschool parent army. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you, David. Appreciate your comments. We'll move on to Dennis Gardella. Dennis Gardella?
They're not online anymore.
Okay, what about Gail McBride? Nope. I think we've done it. Thank you all for calling in. We're adjourned.